This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. It's estimated there are about 4,000 people in Maryland prisons with a diagnosable mental illness. A new controversial report from the Treatment Advocacy Center and the National Sheriff's Association has drawn attention to those inmates and how they get treatment. With me to talk about the report is Dr. Fuller Torrey. He's the lead author of the report and founder of the Treatment Advocacy Center and associate director of the Stanley Medical Research Institute in Chevy Chase. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sheila. Nice to be here.
Also with us is Dr. Brian Hepburn, Executive Director of the Mental Hygiene Administration, which oversees the state's mental health system. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Fuller Torrey, you write that since the 1970s, we've been putting too many of our mentally ill in prisons and jails, and that the numbers there far exceed the numbers in state mental hospitals where they could get treatment. We reached out to Jim Holwager, Director of Behavioral Health Services for the state's prisons. He said prisons are able to handle the mental health needs of their inmates.
We have a whole continuity of treatment for mentally ill people, starting with an outpatient in the general population where we have psychologists and social workers and psychiatrists to provide services for people who are basically similar outpatient in the community. They're in the general population of the prisons. If their mental illness impairs their functioning so that they can't function general population, we have special needs units where we try to help them function, but still stay in the prison.
Dr. Torrey, in your view, why would many of these inmates be better off in state-run hospitals, in psychiatric hospitals?
Well, first of all, I certainly commend the people in the prison for delivering the services, but the people with severe mental illnesses aren't supposed to be in jails and prisons. They're supposed to be either treated in the community or in the hospitals. What our report says is that there has been a striking and continuous increase in the number of seriously mentally ill people in the jails and prisons over the last 30 to 40 years, so that there are now 10 times more seriously mentally ill people in the jails and prisons than there are in the state hospitals. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. They cause all kinds of problems. I have great admiration for the people in the prisons doing the best they can, but prisons are not set up to take care of people with severe mental illnesses. That's not where they belong.
But if they have been found competent and responsible for a crime, you still think they should not be in the prison system?
Well, if they've been responsible for a crime, then they have to go in the prison system. The point is, Sheila, is that they shouldn't be in there in the first place if they had been treated in the community. Most of these crimes are being committed by them because they are severely mentally ill. They're products of their mental illness. And the fact that they're now in jails and prisons is a indication of the failure of our mental health treatment system.
And so what is your recommendation? How do you think the system should change?
We need to hold the people who are in charge of the state departments of mental health responsible for these people. We got to make sure that they get the treatment that they need. And we need to make sure that once they leave prison, that they are put on some kind of medication and ongoing treatment so that they don't end up back in prison, which is what usually happens.
Dr. Brian Hepburn, Dr. Torrey writes that one problem with how the state handles mental health is, quote, the continuing closure of state psychiatric hospitals and the failure of mental health officials to provide appropriate aftercare for the released patients. What do you say to that?
My response to that would be that one of the benefits of the community psychiatry programs over the last 30 years has been more and more work is done in the community and more work is done in private psychiatric hospitals or acute general hospitals with psychiatric units. Whereas, just to give you an idea, in 2012, there were about 50,000 admissions in the state of Maryland for psychiatric care. 98% of those individuals went into private psychiatric hospitals or into acute general hospitals with psychiatric units. What that means is that over the years, people that went into state hospitals because they were uninsured are now getting care in the private sector. So the assumption is that people with means, with funding, are getting good care. The fact that the uninsured are also getting that type of care now is a positive. The other thing is that in our public mental health system, we have 160,000 people getting services. Many of the individuals that Dr. Torrey would be concerned about, those individuals with severe mental illness, are getting their needs met in the community. They are getting psychiatric rehabilitation. They're getting housing through residential rehabilitation. Whatever their needs are, they are getting it. So in Maryland, we're actually very proud of what's happened over the last 30 years. We feel that people are getting the services they need, and they're not being warehoused and institutionalized.
And I understand what you've just said, that would apply to people who are in the community.
Yes.
How does it, though, apply to the incarcerated population?
Yes. What Dr. Torrey is saying is if you don't take care of the people in the community, if you don't take care of their needs, they're going to end up ending up in jails and prison. And we would agree with that. We think that we have to try and take care of people in the community. In Maryland, we have been doing that. We don't think that it's necessary to keep people in state hospitals in order to have an alternative to jails and prisons. We think that by maintaining people in the community, providing the services that they need, that is also preventing people from going into jails and prison.
And once people are in jail or prison and still have these mental health issues?
Well, let's talk about jail. Maryland, for the last 20 years, the Mental Hygiene Administration has worked closely with the wardens, public safety, to try and identify individuals that are in jails that should not be in jails. So we have screeners that will identify those individuals, and if they need inpatient level of care, we'll move them to inpatient level of care. If they need community supports, we'll arrange for them to have community supports. We meet monthly with the wardens. We realize their jobs are very difficult. We realize at times we're not able to meet their needs. We work with them and try and do a better job. But overall, we think we have a good relationship and we're doing the right thing in Maryland.
Dr. Torrey, how does that sound to you?
Well, I certainly admire Dr. Hepburn for the efforts that they're making, but I think the efforts of the mental hygiene department has been grossly a failure, and we will measure that by the number of seriously mentally ill people who are on the streets in Baltimore, and certainly by the increase in the number in jails and prisons, which has gone up. 15% of the prisoners in state prisons today are seriously mentally ill, 20% of the people in the jails. This has increased markedly in the last 30 to 40 years, and I think that alone is a measure of the failure of the system. They're trying, but they're not trying enough.
15% of people in the jails with mental illness, does that match your perception, Dr. Hepburn?
Thank you. We did a study in 2007 that was the result of legislation. And we looked at what was the percentage of individuals with severe mental illness in jails, what was the percentage in prison, and then we looked at other mental illness. What we found is that it was about 8% had severe mental illness, and that's both jail and prison, and about 12% had mental illness that would be considered more mild to moderate, not severe mental illness. So the individuals that we would be most concerned about would be that 8%. As you heard from the representative from corrections, they've tried to identify those people and provide services. For individuals in jails who have severe mental illness and are showing symptoms, and I want to clarify, not everybody who's identified as having severe mental illness is showing symptoms at that time in which they need high-level inpatient care or services. They may be identified as having severe mental illness and be stable on medication. So our screeners try and separate out people that need an immediate response, and that's the population we try and move over to our state hospitals.
On WIPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Dr. Fuller Torrey, lead author of a report on the treatment of mentally ill in prisons across the country, and with Dr. Brian Hepburn, executive director of the Mental Hygiene Administration in Maryland, which oversees the state's mental health system. The TAC report notes that Maryland is one of only 5 states that does not have a law that allows for assisted outpatient treatment, also known as outpatient commitment. Assisted outpatient treatment, or AOT, allows a judge to require certain people with mental illness to take proper medication as a condition of remaining in the community. Dr. Torrey, you say the absence of AOT is not good for mental health in Maryland.
It's not only not good, but it's one of the reasons why Maryland has a particularly large problem of the mentally ill in jails and prisons. 45 states have this law. In North Carolina and New York, studies have been done showing that when you use it, it decreases the number of people who are incarcerated in jails and prisons. Maryland has been very controversial, and the assembly has not passed it. So it's one of only five states where you don't have that option to help people before they end up in jail and prison.
Let me try to understand this better. Dr. Hepburn, why does Maryland not have an assisted outpatient treatment program?
Over the years, Maryland has actually had discussions on this. We've had meetings with stakeholders. We've looked at what population of individuals would be helped by assisted outpatient treatment, or what other people call outpatient commitment. Let me also go back to addressing something Dr. Torrey said about Maryland being one of five. There are many states that have outpatient commitment, but actually haven't implemented it. Only a few have implemented it statewide. There was an article a couple of weeks ago about California, which passed assisted outpatient treatment 12 years ago, and only one county has implemented it. So while what he's saying is correct, that Maryland is one of five, in reality, very few states have implemented it statewide. Let me go on and address the other part of your question. Why not in Maryland? In Maryland, we have something called conditional release, where an individual with mental illness is sent by the courts to a state hospital. And when they come out of the state hospital, they're put on conditional release, which means that if they violate the conditional release, they'll end up having to go back in the hospital. That's very similar to outpatient commitment, assisted outpatient treatment. However, the difference is they have committed a crime. Part of the problem that Marylanders have had who have reviewed this is that assisted outpatient treatment is for people who have not committed any crime, and yet they're forced into a treatment that they may not want, and they may have legitimate reasons for not accepting. And what has been decided over the years in Maryland is that we should not move ahead with that. The other part of it is that some of the studies have showed that what really makes a difference are the intensive treatments. So in Maryland, what we've tried to do is provide the needed intensive treatments, feeling that if you provide the treatments, you don't need the forced course of assisted outpatient treatment.
Well, but if a patient does not avail him or herself of the treatment, it can be as intensive as you want it to be on the books, but if it's not actually being applied to a patient. But Dr. Torrey, I don't quite understand then what the legal basis is if there is someone who has not violated a law and therefore is not serving a sentence of some sort. What is the justification for insisting that person take a treatment that they don't want to take?
The key to this, Sheila, is the fact that about 50% of people with schizophrenia and 40% of people with bipolar disorder have damage to the brain in such a way that they don't know they're sick. They think there's nothing wrong with them. They really think the CIA is sending the messages to them. And therefore, they voluntarily will not seek treatment of any kind. Many of these people are the ones who end up homeless on the streets. Many of them end up committing dangerous acts. Even if they haven't committed a crime, they're in and out of the emergency room. They're in and out of the jail. They're in and out of the hospital. These are the people, about 1% of the seriously mentally ill, who really can benefit from being on the law, which basically says you can live in the community as long as you take your medication. If you don't take your medication, then we have the right to put you back into the hospital on it. That's what it is, and it really works very well for those people. There's now been about 12 studies on it, and it does decrease people in jails and prison. It does decrease time in hospital, decreases victimization. It's very effective, but it's not available in Maryland, so if anyone wanted to use it in Maryland, they couldn't do so.
And what about Dr. Hepburn's point that conditional release is very, very close, but again, it would be a situation after a crime?
He's absolutely right. It is very close, and conditional release is something that works very well. However, you have to have been in the hospital to get it, and in this case, committed a crime. AOT, assisted outpatient treatment, you don't have to commit a crime to get it, and it can help a great deal.
Dr. Torrey, you paint a very bleak picture of how we're addressing the mental health needs of the mental health needs of people who run afoul of the law. Do you see the Affordable Care Act as likely to have any impact on this? I mean, do you think if there were more people with insurance and insurance that covers mental health treatment as well as somatic health, that will keep people out of prisons?
I wish I could be more optimistic, Sheila, but I think the Affordable Care Act is really not going to make too much difference for the people with severe mental illnesses that we're talking about on it. Most of them aren't covered by insurance, and getting somebody to take care of them with Medicaid reimbursement is very, very difficult on it. So I don't really see that. I think it's going to help a lot of people with a lot of other medical problems. I don't really see it as helping the problems we're talking about much at all.
May I respond to that?
Oh, yes.
I would disagree. I think that the Medicaid expansion and the increased number of people with insurance will help people to get services. Also, remember, as part of the Affordable Care Act, you had individuals who could now stay on their parents' insurance until age 26. Remember that when it comes to mental health, about 75 to 80% of people developing severe mental illness will develop it by age 25. So it's really a young person's diagnosis. So you have individuals, young people that may be going off to college, appearing healthy, and during their college years, developing psychotic symptoms and not having insurance. The fact that they can, as a result of the Affordable Care Act, now stay on their parents' insurance until age 26 is a big change that could make a significant difference in the lives of people who are first diagnosed with severe mental illness.
Well, I appreciate you explaining it to us. I appreciate both of you talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Fuller Torrey, he's the lead author of a state-by-state rundown of how mental illness is treated in prisons and jails across the country. He's also the founder of the Treatment Advocacy Center in Arlington, Virginia, and associate director of the Stanley Medical Research Institute in Chevy Chase. Dr. Brian Hepburn is executive director of the Mental Hygiene Administration, which oversees the state's mental health system. We've got more information at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us on 88.1 for more Maryland Morning.